Hey, Drew.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for doing this, first of all. And you're probably like, all right, why is he asking me to do this, right? Like, but honestly, like, I've always been an admirer from afar. And one of the main reasons I wanted you on is I saw you at VU Basel. And you were actually on a panel.
Yep.
And I just loved what you were talking about. Loved, like, your perspective on brand. And I'm, you know, building a brand. And
yeah.
You're building a brand. And I've been, again, just watching from afar. And, like, you know, I say the best form of flattery is when someone, you know, like, emulates you or whatever. And, like, I've gotten so many ideas from you. I actually purposely stopped following you because I felt like I was, like, like you were influencing me too much. That's how funny. Good I think your stuff is. Like, I was literally like, okay, I can't follow this guy anymore because I love his stuff and I don't want to copy him. And
never heard that one before.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And then recently, you know, seeing you in church and sitting in front of me, and then now your daughter plays on my niece's softball team, and I was like, all right, I gotta follow him again. And you started drinking my water, so I was like, all right, yeah, I gotta follow him again. So
yeah.
I still won't pay attention to your clothes, but
that's funny. I appreciate all that, by the way. Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. I told a couple of friends, like, yo, I'm doing Manning's podcast, I'm already intimidated.
Oh, stop.
But it's funny that you say that, because sometimes I have clients that we do design work for. And I'll purposely tell them also, don't send me like any references, or specifically the clients that are like, hey, I had someone do something and I don't like it. I want you to give it a try. I'm like, bro, I don't want to see what they did, just because it's like, maybe I do like what they did.
Exactly.
You know, and then it's a lot harder to go back from there. But yeah, I'm glad you started following me again.
I know, right? I know. And I'm terrible about that. Like, I literally do stuff like that. I'm like, all right, I don't want to be influenced. Like, during the pandemic, I stopped following, like, tons of celebrities and people like that, because I was like, you know what? I don't want to be influenced at all. I just want to lead. I don't want anything to, like, speak for me that's not me. Like, I want to be, like, you know, and again, I say this loosely, with humbly. I mean, I want to be The Rock and Kevin Hart and all these people. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm stealing from them or getting influenced by them. I want to lead from a place of, you know, I'm a 45-year-old man, like, you know, like, I'm a grown-ass man, so that's kind of my thought process. Just diving into that, though, I would love to kind of, like, hear your creative process, because, so, and I'll tee it up for you. For me, I'm very visual. I love just, like, looking, like, going for a walk and just looking at, like, street art and trees and the way the sun hits shadows and just, like, stuff like that. And then all of a sudden I start getting ideas. I love Pinterest. Like, my wife got me really big on Pinterest, and I always laugh at myself, but you can literally type in words on Pinterest and just thousands and thousands of ideas come up. And then you can start to, like, make kind of like dream boards or whatever. I literally designed this entire gym based off of, like, Pinterest. Like, I would just come up with, I would say, like, graffiti, metal cutouts, and then, like, all this stuff would come up, you know? Yeah. So in terms of, like, your creative process, is there any unique thing that you do?
It's pretty similar. I'm the same way. I'm very visual. I get inspired by, I think for me, one of the biggest things that keeps my creativity flowing is working out. Like, that to me is, you know, a lot of people would say that they're working out, you know, for their health or for looks, which I think it's important.
Yeah.
For me, I think my number one reason is to keep a healthy mindset and keep that creativity flowing. There's one day out of the week that I take off of working out, and it makes a big difference. That one day, it's like, it's harder to get into stuff, my rhythm and routine of the day. So that's a big part of
what
it.
What day is that for you?
Thursdays.
Okay. Is there a reason why you chose Thursday, or is it?
I don't like the programming on Thursday.
Okay. And you're at Peak 360, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Shout out to Guido.
It's not that I don't like it, but it's more of like a flow type of workout.
Okay.
I like fast paced stuff nonstop.
Yeah.
So I'll do like an active rest day. So maybe I'll go for a run or a walk that day or whatever.
Do we need to bring up the time we worked out together and you?
Dude, that's classic.
So we have the all time classic thing that I think you're the only person probably to ever say this to me. But we're literally, we're partners in on a church before church.
Yeah.
We're on the fan bike. And I like go to push you and you go, chill. Do you want to do it? Because you literally, I kid you not. I mean, it's like it was yesterday. And by the way, everybody who still every time I see them, they go, chill, bro. It's Sunday.
Yeah,
the best thing everyone's, I never, like, I don't even laugh in workouts. And you know how serious I am. And I literally was dying out laughing. I was like, this guy seriously just say this to me?
Yeah.
It was awesome.
But bro, that's how I am about like workouts. Like I'll go hard.
Yeah.
But I also know like my limits on stuff. And Guido, like I have a story with Guido also. You guys are very similar, like mentality wise. Yeah. One time I'm about to get on a rower and like, it's like the way that it pulls, it's off. So I get off and I get on another. He's like, why'd you switch? It's like, bro, cause that one's off. He's like, bro, you should choose the hard stuff in life. I was like, bro, if there's
the machine's broken.
Yeah. I'm like, if there's a better one next to me, I'm gonna choose that one, bro.
Yeah. No, and I actually would lean towards that too. I totally understand.
So that day is like, they're like telling me, let's, bro, what time was it? Like 5:30, 6 in the morning on a Sunday?
Yeah. It was brutal.
I was like, chill, bro, it's Sunday. I'm trying to enjoy my Sunday.
It still was awesome. I love it. But you actually, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you're in great shape, right? You look better than you have in years.
I'm in the best shape I've ever been.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel
and on
great.
That day off, are you doing anything like from a recovery standpoint? Like, or do you just literally just take the day off?
So I'll take the day off or I'll do like an active rest day. So I'll do a run or a walk or something light. Like I won't do anything crazy that day. And if there's a day in the week that I don't like last week I had something at school for the kids and I had to miss, I think it was like a Tuesday or something. Mm-hmm. So then I'll go that Thursday.
Okay.
But I'll tell you a funny story. This week there was a day that Chloe had her award ceremony, right? And it was a Tuesday. But in my head, I hadn't like fully thought out like, man, I'm gonna miss Tuesday. Then I gotta go Thursday. So because it wasn't like a thought out like rest day, like that's part of my rest day, knowing and looking forward to that day.
Right.
So I'm like, bro, I can't miss today. So I went like in the middle of the afternoon, I literally almost passed out, like worked out at 12 in the afternoon. But yeah, so my rest day can't just be a random day out of the week. It has to be like thought out, planned out, like looking forward to it where I literally just chill.
Are you a routine guy? Like, do you find yourself like very regimented?
Not super strict, but I definitely have a daily routine for sure. Yeah.
And just so we can like keep the audience up to speed, tell us a little bit about, you know, your business, what you started, when you started it. Like I don't even know either. I mean, I'm a fan, but I don't know the history and I don't know how you fell into it. And it's Friends and Family, right? Is the name?
Yeah.
Which by the way, genius right there, first of all. So where, like, just tell us, like as much as you can tell me, I love this kind of stuff. So, you know, and especially I'm gonna like push you on the tough times and the difficult challenges and things like that, because I think that's what people need to hear.
Yeah.
It's not all fun and games when you're building a brand and when you're, especially the apparel business is brutal,
right?
As we know. So take me from the beginning and how it all started, and then we can like lead up to where you are today.
So I started in design maybe 20 years ago or so. And I started off with doing print design. So I would do flyers and banners and this whole thing. And I actually had a business back then of a printing company.
Okay.
So we would do a lot of like realtors' offices. We would do a lot of like construction companies. We had a check cashing store that we would do like 33 of their locations.
Oh, wow.
I was young. I was like 22.
Do you have a graphic design background or?
I went to school for a year for graphic design and then I stopped. It's funny. So I went for a year to art school. Then I thought, I was like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. And then I was like, I'm going to become a teacher. That didn't work. So then I got back.
What were you teaching?
No, I didn't become a teacher.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I didn't.
What made you even think that you
could? I don't know, bro. I don't know what it was, but I the only thought I remember is like, I don't know if I want to sit behind a computer all day long.
Yeah.
That's like my thought when I think about that time. Like, I think that was the reason I made that choice.
Right.
But yeah, the whole teacher thing in Miami-Dade didn't work out. So went back to design, had the printing company. Then in 2008, so the printing company was very successful, but I was very young. So it's like we'd make a ton of money, but I would close the next day and just have my friends over. We'd order pizza and play like blackjack in the office. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like just that type of, just like not understanding money at that time.
Okay.
Right. Then 2008 came.
Which is so true, right? Like when we were in our 20s, and to all your 20 year olds out there, like save your money. Like, yeah. You know, like actually save it. Like, because if I could go back to my 20 year old self, the amount of money that, because it was almost like, and before 2008, it was easy to make money. Like yeah, there was a lot was of great. Ways you could make money and the economy was thriving. And then obviously 2008, it kind of yeah. crashed.
But. So I got married in 2000. I got married in 2006.
Your
right?
wife right now is going, yeah. Really?
That's why I got it tattooed on me, bro. 2006. We got married 2006, right? So the last job I ever did in that printing company was November of 2007.
Okay.
It was I'll never forget it. It's an $11,000 job that I did. That was like the last income I made. November 2007, I didn't get a job till October of 2008.
Oh, wow.
A whole year.
A whole year.
We had just gotten married. We had just bought a house.
And how did you, so did you have some savings or?
No, nothing. I had nothing.
So she was the breadwinner or what happened?
So
how are you paying your bills?
I couldn't. Like, this is that difficult part of life.
You got to explain this to me though.
Yeah.
Because I've never understood this because I've heard this from people before. Like, how do you live?
Dude, we couldn't live. That's the thing. It's like, I remember moments. A whole year, bro, of like, I couldn't even find, I had a printing company. I couldn't even find a job at a printing place. Remember, this is when the economy crashed.
No,
like,
exactly.
Nobody's yeah. hiring.
I opened
no
my
work.
Gym right then. So right. November 2008 is when I opened my gym right after the recession.
Right.
And it was crickets. Like, I mean, yeah. nobody's paying somebody $300 an hour to work right. out.
But
like,
you caught it towards the end.
Yeah.
So mine
a
was.
A little bit. You got it hit because it started in 2007.
Right.
That's when it was worse. Yeah. Like,
so
yeah.
the last project that did was 2007, November.
Okay.
Boom, that hits. Then my wife at this time is working at the Homestead Police Department.
Okay.
You know, just she's not a police officer, just a regular like admin job or whatever. So that's it. I literally can't pay the bills. I have no income coming in. I'll never forget those times where it's like all we could have, like we'd be sitting with friends like, oh, let's go grab lunch. It's like, bro, all I could go get is a Subway, you know, $2.99 thing right now.
Wow.
Like she couldn't go do her hair. She couldn't do her nails. Like those days where I couldn't get out of bed, like of how depressed I was. Like knowing.
And I'm assuming that was very strenuous.
It was. That was our first year of marriage,
too, your first
bro.
Year.
Our first year.
By the way, your wife is amazing, by the way.
She's
so
incredible.
She's so talented.
Yeah.
And she's just got one of those spirits that's just like you just want to just kind of like, you know, yeah, go yeah. like this. That's the only way I can describe it. It's like, yeah. you know, she's just a fun woman. Like,
yes, she's yeah. definitely super fun.
Yeah.
Super fun, down to earth, super real. Yeah, she's great. So then that happens, right? We end up losing the house. We end up moving into one of my aunt's properties. Then I ended up getting a job. While we weren't paying, like this is when everyone lost their houses right. and we weren't paying mortgage, that whole ordeal. So I get a job in October of 2008 designing apparel. I hated apparel.
Really?
When I had my printing company, I would turn that away. Like I'd have companies be like, oh, do you do shirts? And I would tell them, no, we don't do that.
And
I just
why?
Didn't like it. I didn't like the process of like having to order shirts, then send them to print, like that whole thing. I didn't like it.
The process does suck. I mean, it still is right. not the fun part of
it. I enjoy it. Now I like all of yeah. it, but back then. So then that's the only job I could get because a friend of mine worked there. And I was like, hey, I see that company's hiring. You think I could get a job? He's like, bro, I'll talk to the boss, send your portfolio. He's like, but don't fake your portfolio because he'll catch it. Like, this dude is up to date with culture, this whole thing. I had no portfolio of apparel. So designing print and designing apparel is two different worlds.
Right.
So, bro, I had to literally figure out how to make my flyer designs into apparel designs and make a portfolio. So I did that.
I love that, though.
Send it in. I get the job. I'm making $500 a week.
Okay.
That's so you're the balling. Salary. Right. No. At that point for me, that was great. Like, dude, I had no money for a year. So now I'm making $2,000 a month. You know, I'm back on
you're
it.
You're back. Yeah, exactly.
First week of going to work, I have no gas and my account is overdrawn. I'm like, bro, I thought I was back on my feet.
Yeah.
I had to get a friend to meet me at the gas station, put gas in my car for me. We're living all the way down in Eureka. This job is all the way Eureka's by Metro Zoo. Further past.
So that's like past Kendall?
Oh, way past Kendall, bro. Yeah.
like Color Bay? Like
past Color Bay. What? Down south that way. That's where we were living. Where I was working was, what's that airport, that private airport? Opa-locka.
Yeah.
There. So I would make that drive every day.
That's brutal.
Yeah. So so that happens, right? Then yeah. I get this job. We're kind of getting back to normal. There's some money coming in. My boss calls me in and he tells me, he's like, hey, you're a great guy. I really like you.
Oh God, he's going to fire you.
But your designs are not cutting it.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to give you a chance, but you have to step it up with design. And I tell everyone the story. It's like, that moment is where my life changed right there. Because there was no way I was losing that job.
Yeah.
So I walked out of that office and I'm like, I'm going to learn everything there is about this industry so that they can't get rid of me. So I'm not the greatest designer.
But I love that. But talk. So let's talk about that. Like, what did you do in that moment to... Yeah. learn and to grow as an artist.
So for me, I was like, you know, it's gonna take time for me to become a better designer, right? So it's like, I'm gonna learn the industry. I'm gonna learn who are the top people in the industry. I'm gonna learn printing. I'm gonna learn fabrics. I'm gonna learn ink colors. I'm gonna, like, all that stuff. I'm gonna be the best at doing research and finding references and getting ideas. And to this day, that's my strong point. I don't consider myself the best designer at all, but I will outwork anyone as far as knowing the industry. That's for sure.
I love that. Yeah.
And for me, that's what I'm attracted to.
Okay.
So I tell this story of like my barber, right? And I said this at the Vu Basil thing. What I love about my barber, he doesn't just know how to cut hair. He knows the history about cutting hair. Things you don't even need to know to be a good barber, but he knows the history about cutting hair. He knows different hairstyles that he doesn't even do. But that stuff to me is what sets you apart from a regular barber, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, what would set me apart from an amazing designer is the fact that I could have one conversation with you and I could probably pick up the style that you like and what you're going for just from a conversation.
Right.
So right now for me, it's like, I'll do a project and bro, there's probably zero turnaround as far as changes because I already know that whole process of like doing the research, finding references, getting ideas. And that's where I set myself apart in that job. So I was there for about a year. While I was there, I started getting clients. So about a year and a half in, I went back on my own and I started my Tuma Design, which is the agency that we designed for other brands.
Okay.
And that was 13 years ago.
And you're still doing Tuma too?
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
13 years ago. And then 4 years ago, I started Friends and Family. So Friends and Family is our own apparel brand. And I knew it was something I always wanted to do, but because I did it for so many other people, I knew the amount of time it took and the amount of money it took to do. And at that point, 4 years ago, I knew it was the right time to finally, you know, take that step to do our own brand. And here we are today.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that. And I mean, again, I love because people only see where you are today.
Yeah.
And they don't realize what it took to get here. So, and then also just that, like you had so a lot of people face what you faced with that boss. You know, like you have a decision to make in that moment to either complain, be a victim, or you have a decision to go home, learn, grow, yeah, and come back and prove yourself. And yeah, so you made the right decision, and that's why you're sitting where you are today and and thriving.
Yeah, it's true. That moment right there could have been like, dang, you're right. Like, I'm not good at design.
Talking to somebody today, I mean, we are literally the decisions that we make. Like, that is who we are. Right. Like, you are your decisions.
Yeah.
Like, it's that simple. Like, making the wrong choices and the wrong decisions typically will end up in a bad place. Like, yeah, that's just like how life is. So I know that, cause you just said, so you said 14 years, Tuma, and
yeah, 13.
13 years, mm-hmm, and then 4 years friends and family. So I know it wasn't all rainbows and sunshines and like just going like
right,
this.
No.
Can you identify anything during that period in the last decade,
mm-hmm,
where you had to say pivot, or, you know, any kind of like aha moment that made you like kind of like figure stuff out, like as a business owner or a designer or just anything? Does anything stand out to you during those times?
Yeah, it's been pretty consistent. I think one of the big things, it's like, so what I figured out was my issue when I had the printing company was the cash flow, right? It's like we'd make a lot of money, but it wasn't consistent.
Okay.
So I knew that whenever I started another business, I needed to figure out how to get that cash flow. So what I did with the apparel company was I got clients on contract. But with that also comes, you know, ups and downs. It's like contracts don't last forever.
Right.
You know, so I've had clients that we worked together for 5 years, but then there's other clients that's like, you know, in 6 months, that's it, we're done. So that's a huge chunk, you know, like depending on who the client is, that's could be $10,000 gone a month now,
right,
because
right,
that client is done with.
When you say contract, do you try to get, is there a time frame? Like, do you try to a year? Or like,
so
how
that's
does it work?
Funny. I don't do contracts.
Oh, okay. You don't.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't do contracts, so that I don't want to force anyone to work with me.
Okay.
So even if we did have a contract and you wanted to get out, I would never want to force you to be like, hey, you have 3 months left.
Yeah.
So,
and that whole thing is exhausting anyway.
Right.
It's like,
so I don't think I'm going to sue anyone. Like, yeah, I don't care. A lot of people would think I'm crazy for not doing that, but I don't.
No, I think, you know, I've been in those positions before, and it robs your own joy. Like, and trust me, like mediations and all that stuff,
yeah,
it is exhausting.
Yeah, I would never want to do
and
that.
And it literally takes up your time where you could be working on another project. So
yeah,
I always feel like if it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And you just part ways and
yeah,
try to do it as right, seamless as possible. So
yeah. So in those moments of like losing clients, it's like, it gets scary. But the beautiful thing is that because I've been doing it for so long, I've seen God's faithfulness. And no matter whether I lose, you know, multiple clients at once and I feel like, how am I going to figure this out? It's always, to this day, 13 years later, worked out and been fine. So I think that's probably one of the biggest lessons it's taught me, where it's like, I trust God with my finances. I trust that God is my provider. And I've gotten to a point where it's like, I've been very low and I don't freak out. I'm totally fine. Like, it's going to work out.
There's like a quiet confidence when you move in favor and faith.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when troubles come and opposite, I mean, of course we're human, so it is stressful, but it doesn't change you. Like, it doesn't, you know, I see a lot of people, it kind of changes people, but when your trust is in God, then you just keep going.
Like, yeah,
and then he always provides. I love, my dad always says he's not on when we want him to be there, like, but he's never late, right?
He's
always right on time. And
I
normally
agree.
It's at the last hour, but it always happens.
Yeah.
It always works out. So
yeah,
that's powerful.
I agree.
Yeah. All right. So going back to the processes, is there any project that stands out to you that you're like really, really proud of, like recently or in the past? Like,
I think there's a lot of stuff that I've done that I'm really proud of. You know, a lot of the stuff that we did is like with startup brands and just helping them grow. That to me was always fun. One of my first clients was this brand out of LA. This is when I still had a job, and I found them on Craigslist. Like I would go on Craigslist to get like some like side jobs, little design work. So I end up getting this client and we get on the phone. They're like, hey, our designer just got arrested and he's not going to be out for a while. No. So we need a designer. And we just started this brand. I was like, cool, let's do it. That same day, I ended up getting another client to design NHL stuff. So I was like, man, this is really cool. You know, NHL was a one-off project. This client ended up being one of my clients for 5 years. And bro, I went to Vegas with them multiple times a year. I helped them build their brand literally from the ground up. That brand ended up becoming, you know, 10 million plus brand.
Wow.
We lived in LA for 2 months working with them. So that was fun. That was really fun.
And they're still to this day, or are they?
No,
they're gone.
The owner, these guys were crazy. Dude, we went to Vegas. It was like rock star. Like,
yeah.
My first time in Vegas, I stayed in a hotel room with French Montana.
No way.
Yeah.
Because of this clothing line?
Yeah, in a room with a bowling alley. Like every morning we'd wake up and it was like a whole like 10 trays of breakfast. Yeah, it was insane with these people. So you imagine how much money they spent. It was insane. So yeah, it came to an end. But right now, honestly, I'm really passionate about just friends and family, what I'm doing right now. So I don't even take on a bunch of clients anymore because I'm focusing on building the brand. And this year more than ever. So we've been out for 4 years and our releases and our drops haven't been as consistent as they should be as a brand. But it's what we're focusing on this year. So we have a drop coming up next week. And then after that, it's just nonstop to the end of the year.
And do you, because I've been dealing with this on my end in terms of like, so the apparel business for me has always been challenging from an inventory standpoint. It's always like people, the demand is always, they want new stuff, but then you make a lot of stuff and then you have old stuff that hasn't sold, but yet people are still wanting new stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you manage that? Like, what is your process?
So for me in the beginning, we would keep our inventory low.
Okay.
A lot of people try doing, the pre-sale thing. Yeah. I always tell brands like it's, you could try it and do it. It's never going to work out to the timelines that you're planning for.
Yeah.
So we don't do pre-sale. So in the beginning, we did very low inventories. Stuff would sell out, which was good because it created, you know, that hype for the next one.
Yeah. It was like, there's like a FOMO there.
Yeah. So it would always do that. Our stuff would just sell out. Now we're at a point where our whole collection is cut and sew. So it's a lot higher quantities, which I'm totally fine with. You know, we've done already now, I think this is our second cut and sew collection that's coming out. Our first one did great. It sold amazing. Urban Outfitters picked it up.
And by the way, my wife told me, and I didn't know that. So I didn't know you were in Urban Outfitters. And I was talking about you today with my wife and she was like, you know, they're in Urban Outfitters. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So well, we amazing. Were because it sold out in Urban Outfitters as well, which is that's great. Awesome. Yeah. So the time that we were in Urban Outfitters, we had two products that were rated top products the whole time, which is great. And then now it's completely sold out. But yeah, I think that's what we do now. I don't mind having inventory now because a lot of people is like, oh, but don't you love like the selling out thing? And I came to this point where it's like, dude, selling out is really cool in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you know what's cooler? Having inventory to make more money. Like that.
That's a good perspective. So
yeah, because I would always have conversations like, I went on your site and you don't have anything. It's like, right. That's a lost sale. That's more money I could have made right there. You know? Yeah. So for me now, it's like, I don't mind having inventory. If it sells out with the quantities I'm doing now, great. But I've never even been able to do a Black Friday sale. Really? I don't have stuff. So even now, like I'm doing these quantities that I'm doing, hoping that by December, I still have stuff to do a Black Friday sale.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you talk about like your quantities, and again, if I'm overstepping, just tell me, but like your MOQs, like what are they?
It depends on the product, but some would be 100 and then others are 300.
Okay. All right. So that's some like I deal mostly in 250 range.
Mm-hmm.
And which I still find to be sometimes too much. That, like it's like
it is a lot, and you know, especially if you're doing like, multiple SKUs.
Right.
Yeah. So right now I have a collection, the one that comes out. It's a hoodie and a t-shirt, but in four different colors.
Okay.
So that's 8 SKUs, and a hat, that's 9 SKUs.
Is that the hat that I just saw?
Yeah, that one.
Bro, that hat is so yes. Guys, hats are very challenging. Like
right.
Because it's such a unique, like I have a pea head and then my brother has a monster head. Like everyone's head is different.
Yeah.
You know, you got so many, like the trucker, the dad hat, the fitted hat. There's so many different ones. And I thought when I saw the hat just now on your Instagram a couple of days ago, what I noticed, it's very like old school meets new school.
Yeah.
I love the inside, the detail. Where did you do this? Did you outsource this?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
All my stuff is done overseas.
Okay. In China or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In China.
So. And trust me, guys, and I'm sure you're the same way. I tried to do stuff in the United States and it's impossible. It's impossible.
It is. Like the prices are just
insane.
Yeah.
You can't get away with it.
Right. I'll be honest. I haven't fully dove in to look into doing production.
I have.
But I know from experience and past clients that, yeah, doing it.
So for me, it's been China, Pakistan, mm-hmm. and India.
Yeah.
Have been very good. Like, and China, unfortunately, has been the best as far as pricing and quality and turnaround and all that. Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, I've one of the things I've really thought, and we can talk about this offline maybe, but I have so many people in the apparel industry. I always said, like, if we all, like, had a big meeting one day, we could possibly do like a warehouse and build like an operation. Like, you know, like I really, you know, maybe
I've had those conversations too with friends.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would, again, our cost is going to be high as well.
It's so hard.
It's the cost
compete.
Of labor too. Exactly. Here, you got to pay more here than you'll pay over there. So yeah.
All right. So the hat, you said hoodies and short, right? That's
so
the new drop?
Yeah, so this drop right now, it's not the coolest or craziest one, but it's kind of like our introduction to like our core collection.
Okay.
You know? So it's just pieces that say friends on it, four different colors, and it's kind of like that piece that I want everybody to have.
Love it.
You know? So we did that, and it's kind of like, dude, we haven't put anything out since last summer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So it's been a whole year almost that we haven't put anything out. So this feels almost like just like a relaunch of like, we're back, or not that we're back, because believe it or not, dude, our clients and our following is great.
No, it's massive. They're
super loyal.
Your reach is tremendous.
They love
the
stuff, which I am so grateful for.
Well, the name is genius. So where did the name come from? Like who?
That's a cool story.
Yeah, tell me about that.
The original, I don't think I've ever said this. So the original name of the brand was going to be called Chapter and Verse.
Really?
Yeah.
Which, so, by the way, I like that too. Like,
yeah, it's cool.
You might have a spinoff there.
The only thing is that I didn't want to get categorized as like a Christian brand.
Right.
So what happened was I was doing these hoodies, Chapter and Verse, and then on the sleeves, I put friends and family because I wanted to send them out to my friends. And as I'm doing, I'm like, dude, friends and family sounds really dope, you know? And it's not like gonna pigeonhole me in any category, but it's very relatable. And then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go with friends and family. So I switched it all up right there and everything became friends and family from there.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I love, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you've done some stuff where it's like, F-R,
yeah,
N-D-S,
yeah,
and then
without the vowels, but like, we got sued.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because some guy in Portland owns the word friend for apparel, F-R-N-D, and that was a whole ordeal, story.
I hate to hear that, because I thought that was genius,
too. That was scary, bro.
Yeah, like, I'm sure.
That could have ended me, because it was...
So he owned the trademark for that?
Yes.
And family or just friend?
No, just friend. So,
which is interesting because I've been through a lot of trademark issues with No Days Off. And I was under the impression, and you'll school me on this now, like where if you if it's 30% different, then right. they can't do anything. So to me, adding family would make that
right.
no.
But some of my stuff just said, like what you're saying, friends, okay. right?
All
right. So what I was trying to fight back is like, dude, it says friends, not friend, which I understand. Regardless, I told him, I'm like, look, fine. Anything that says friends on it, I'm going to take it down.
Yeah.
He wanted me to take it down from Instagram, from the website, not create any more stuff with it. And I was cool with that. I was like, I'm like, all right, bro, I'll do it. You know, I got on the phone with him because first I just got papers from the attorney.
Right.
And I was like, let me talk to this guy.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like conversations could solve a lot of things.
Yep.
So I got on the phone with him. He's really cool. He's like, bro, I love your brand, this whole thing. And I'm like, dude, this is how I live. This is not a side project.
Right.
His was a little bit of a side. It looks like a side project, but he didn't care. He's like, bro, this is my name and I own it. And I was like, all right, cool. I'll take the stuff down. Took all the stuff down. Then I get hit up again by his attorney. I'm like, hey, why is your attorney still? He's like, bro, you still have stuff on the site.
Did you or no?
I had stuff that said friends and family abbreviated. He's like, you can't even have that. So then I got my attorney involved. My attorney ended up saying like, yeah, he has the right. Like, he's like, you could fight it, but he's like, he has a really good chance on wow. winning it, whatever. Then his attorney sent stuff to my Shopify, to Shopify corporate, and Shopify shut down my site.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. That wasn't the worst part. The worst part was that I was about to go into my first cut and sew production. Thankfully, it was delayed. And we didn't go into production. But that, if I would have gone into production, because everything said friends, that's how I did the brand back
right.
then. Just FRNDS.
I remember, because I loved it.
Yeah, like, that's all it was.
Really cool.
So if that would have gone into production, I wouldn't be able to sell it, and I would have been done. That would have been the end of Friends and Family.
And when did this happen?
This happened about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So thankfully, it wasn't in production yet. I changed all the art. Send back the tech packs, and it was, thankfully it was fine. The kid's cool. He, you know, we moved on and
yeah.
and I ended up, the worst part is I got the tattoos a couple weeks before.
It's still, by the way, you're sitting here and I noticed them and yeah. I still think they're dope. So you're fine with
that. So moving forward, I was fine with it. I actually love how it looks completely spelled out. I feel like it's a more grown up feel to it. It's not playful. It's, you know, it's just more serious.
Right.
And I love it.
And so. and is that trademark for you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I've always had that trademark. Yeah.
Please tell me that's trademarked. Yeah, yeah.
That's trademark.
I don't want to see somebody else coming at you. Yeah. Because it's brutal. Like, and I kind of see both sides because I've had to protect No Days Off like something serious and have spent a fortune doing it. And yeah. I mean, I even had the New England Patriots use it and I had wow. to go after them. So I've had H&M, Flywheel when they went bankrupt, but when they were trying to use it, UFC gym, like wow. I had a lot of people use it, and
you have it trademarked as so for apparel right now, or for
right now we'll talk offline about this because I don't want the yeah, cat yeah, out of the yeah, bag yeah, on yeah. everything, but I own it right now for beverages, for gyms, for fitness use, okay. all that stuff, and then I'll tell you the other stuff
yeah yeah,
you
know, yeah.
offline, but. Yeah, it's that trademark world is I mean, even the word legacy, like recently I had a gym in Houston, Texas using legacy. And the thing is like what I don't think what people understand is that it costs you a lot of money to mm-hmm. fight it.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, you own it, but you're having to pay a lawyer $400 to $500 an hour to fight yeah. it for you. And a lot of times people call your bluff. Like mm-hmm. they basically, you send them a cease and desist and then they're like, okay, sue me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then my lawyer calls me and is like, do you want to spend $25,000? Like, you know, and you're like,
yeah.
I don't know about that. You have to like really think yeah. about it, you know?
My first Friends and Family collection that I ever did was completely the whole collection knocked off by a kid in India.
No way.
Yeah, like the exact designs.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
I've had that
and
done
was
a lot.
Selling it in India?
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do about that, right? Good. Like
at that point, I didn't care. I've had PacSun do stuff.
Really?
Like my design.
So I'm guilty of stealing one of your designs. So one of the things I thought was genius was the upside down words on the shorts. And I did a couple of No Days Off upside down because I loved that.
That's fire.
No, it was great. I was like, that's one of the ones I stole from you. I was like, I hope he doesn't mind.
But seriously, you know what's funny?
I love your style though, man. Like you have such a, I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, like Vu uses a lot of your stuff, right?
Well, I do. Rich would tell you, it's like I helped create the look that we have at now.
Because to me, like, their look is your look. Like, it's like, there's so much synergy there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I started and with Rich them from day one.
Yeah, Rich and I, like, we have very similar taste. And it feels like we all kind of come from that cloth of, like...
Which is, that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm not the greatest designer, but for me, I'm more about placement of stuff. So it's like, I can't draw anything. But I know where to place it on the apparel to make it look different, make it look cool, make it stand out. And I think that's my strength in design.
Yeah. And that's actually, I similarly, not to try to compare myself to you, but that's where I feel like is also like, I like to not necessarily create things, but be the first to do it in a different way.
In a different way, right. You know?
And I feel like, even in business, like I think that if you can become a category disruptor instead of the best at something, actually be the first at something.
Right.
And so I'm really leaning into that, like from packaging, like also, you know, with the beverages, like, okay, what can I do that nobody else has done?
Yeah.
What comes with that though, that I found, I'm sure you've experienced this, is it cost a fortune
to figure out. Yeah. To make nice stuff. But, yeah.
Well, here's the thing. So what I'm finding in the beverage world is that it's been done a certain way for so long that when you say, oh, I don't want to do it that, no one can do it. Like there's no, you have to do it fully custom.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, for example, when I was designing the cans, I had so many ideas with the cans and they're like, no, you can't do that. Chill, no, bro. You can't do that. Yeah, no. Yeah. And then like I wanted the pull tab to be the shape of the Pitbull.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, yeah, the MOQ is 9 million.
Right, there you go.
And I was like, 9 million? I was like, okay, never mind. You know, like,
yeah.
So it's, sometimes your creative gets shot down.
Like, you know what reminds me of that? I started using this protein. And always with the protein bottles, they're like, you know, these huge containers. And like the scoop thing is like in there.
And it always gets lost.
Yeah, like, so this company came up with like a little hook inside.
Oh, genius.
Yeah, genius, right?
Right. But they're so simple too.
Yeah, but there's a reason why. Like, you think no one's thought about that?
Yeah.
Like these huge companies, like they haven't thought about. Sure, they have. Right. Now you buy it, no more hook.
No.
That's it. You know what I'm saying? It's like they launched with it, but I'm sure it's an added cost.
I guarantee
you. Of course.
I guarantee you. So I wanted to, have you ever seen the soft touch boxes? You know what I'm talking about? So it's called soft touch.
Okay.
So it's a box that has like a very soft texture.
Okay.
And when you do the matte black, it like looks badass. Yeah. Like it looks really cool. The cost of that is insane.
Yeah. And then you start thinking it's like, they're going to get it, throw it away.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you start thinking of that. Yeah,
what I love about brands is those details.
Yes.
When they do it, you know? And I think, you know, I think we will get to a point where we could meet those MOQs and it will make sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love brands that all those little details are thought out.
And it reminds me, my COO and I were talking and we were talking about the beverages and the packaging and the way he described how you open the Apple, iPhone box.
Yeah.
And how it's like smooth, suction and how it like pops and like that. And it's just so true. And like Dre Beats, like when you get your Dre Beats headphones.
Right.
And the other day I ordered these mushrooms, not psychedelic guys, the cognitive mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from a company in Australia. And it was the same thing. Like it just like, popped open. And it's that, for me, it's like enhancing the customer experience and making it more premium. Just set yourself apart it's a memory, right? And then it gets people talking about your brand. Mm-hmm. Like right now, I just, you know, the brand is called Life Cycle and, you know, we're shouting them out because here, you know, so on the friends and family, where do you see yourself? Like, where are you trying to take this? Like, what's your vision where you are now and mm-hmm. then where you see it going? Like, you have big aspirations. Like, let me ask you this. Like, is it only online right now? Is there any thought of, like, I know you're in Urban Outfitters. Mm-hmm. Are you thinking about licensing it out? Like, what's your, like, vision for the brand, you know?
Yeah, right now it's online only. I don't want to do small wholesale. Like, I don't want to do boutiques.
Okay.
Not that it's bad or anything. It's just, that's not the business I want to go in. In order to make money in that formula, it's like you got to have hundreds of small boutiques putting in, you know, 25 shirts here, 50 shirts here. It's like, that's not what I want to deal with. So I'd rather focus online, do a lot of, you know, email marketing, get emails. And I'm okay with the bigger box stores, like an Urban Outfitters, a
and
Nordstrom.
And how did the Urban Outfitters came to be? Like,
that's actually a funny story. So that one, so these buyers, it's like a secret society. You can't find them. There's nowhere you could go to, like, figure out who these people are. And if you do find them, they won't reach back out to you. This whole thing. So I want to say that Mao connected me. He's like, here are two emails. I don't know if they work or not, but my manager, somebody gave him two emails from Urban. Yeah. He's like, just send it. One of them worked. The guy got back to me. We were communicating. He put someone else in the email thread. We're going back and forth. And then the communication just stopped out of nowhere. I must have sent this guy probably 8 other emails with no response. Like, my last email was, hey, I have a 10-year-old daughter who keeps asking me when my stuff is going to be in Urban Outfitters.
I like that play. That was
it
a
was
good
true
play.
Though.
Yeah.
Chloe would keep asking me, like, is your stuff in there yet? So that was my
That's
email.
That's the worst, too. Like,
so I tell this guy, like, hey, I have a 10-year-old daughter who's asking me, just give me an answer. Dude, I get no reply. So I give up on it. I'm like, okay, you know, it didn't work out.
Yeah.
At least we had some communication. Cool. Then a year and a half later, I'm like, I'm going to send this guy an email again. I send the email and I get a response.
A year and a half later.
Yeah.
Like, what prompted you to do that?
I don't know. It was. I have this email.
Yeah.
These are super hard to find. I'm going to just reach out again
Shoot
and see
shot.
What happens.
Like, right,
dude,
yeah.
we had a conversation. You yeah. were interested.
Yeah.
Then I get a reply. Hey, this guy's no longer with the company. And I was like, this
now
is perfect.
It makes sense. Exactly.
But I was fine with that.
Right.
Because I was like, hey, I was in conversation with him about putting an order.
Yeah.
So we just picked up the conversation from there and they put an order.
That's amazing.
Yeah. We were going back.
And you sold out.
Yeah. So
and was it in all the Urban Outfitters?
No. So
okay,
they asked me, do you want to go brick and mortar, which would be at a location, or do you want to go e-com, which is online? What they do when you're a new brand in their system, they do what's called a test order. So I wanted to control that a little bit, right? So if I went brick and mortar, it would look really cool. You know, we're in the store.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know where they would place it. You know, it could end up in Nebraska, Urban Outfitter. Yeah.
So you had no control.
No control. If we went online, now I could text my friends. I could send an email out. And then, you know, we start getting some traction.
Yeah.
And the whole reason for a test order is for them to see if it works, right? So I was like, let's go online. So they put an order. The whole shipping and wholesale is a whole nother ballgame.
Yeah.
It's literally a whole separate thing. And I remember there's a guy in LA that I keep in contact with. He's like a legend in apparel industry. And I asked him one time about wholesale, you know, because he's been in a lot of accounts. And he's like, bro, I'm going to give you one advice about wholesale. He's like, don't chase wholesale. Let it come to you.
Okay.
Which was great.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I was chasing in the beginning. The conversation stopped. I reached back out and it ended up working out and happening. You know, maybe if it would have happened sooner, I wouldn't be ready.
Right.
But long story short, it's like, dude, everything has to be shipped specifically. The box has to be a certain size. The labels have to be placed in a certain location on the box. This hoard, and they don't help you at all.
Really?
I write emails. I'm like, hey, can we get on a quick call? I just have a question. Oh, please refer to brand guide. I don't know what.
And do you have to ship everything to like their fulfillment center?
Yeah,
and
yes.
Then they ship it to whoever buys it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yes. I'm dealing with that. We launched on Amazon with the beverages. And we're learning like literally
to a distribution center.
Yeah. So you send it to the fulfillment center in Charlotte and you send like, you know, say 6 pallets of each, and then they ship it out all over the country.
Yeah.
It's actually pretty fascinating. I was actually going to ask you, have you ever thought of Amazon?
I haven't thought about Amazon.
So we'll talk about it offline, but I think it would be
something. Do they put an order in, or is it you send them product and if it sells, then they send you whatever sells?
Yeah. So that's how you start out.
Yeah.
But the goal is to sell to Amazon instead of through Amazon.
Exactly.
So when you first start, you sell through Amazon.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you hit enough velocity, then you start selling to Amazon wholesale, and then they do
everything
for you. Like literally everything. They even market for you.
Right.
And then it almost like you're almost like an Amazon brand.
Yeah.
So that's the ultimate goal. But for you, because of your content is so good, so you build your brand registry and you actually set up your brand store on Amazon, and you're talking about 200 million people.
Right. That's where it's worth it for sure.
If you're big on e-com, I think definitely that might be a play.
Yeah.
Like I'm actually looking into it now with my apparel, now that we did it with the beverages. Mm. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
And I can help you with
that's sick.
So it's really cool. So we had to hire like Amazon experts, you know?
Yeah.
And there's like so many different things you can do. Like for example, we were playing around you play around with keywords, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we were playing around with everybody that's been buying Celsius. We use Celsius keywords.
Yep.
And literally we were getting like 20 something people that bought Celsius buying our stuff.
That's
like,
awesome.
Yeah. It's like you can play that game, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's that whole marketing game that we haven't got into either.
Yeah.
Like, we've done zero marketing.
Really?
Yeah, zero. And not because we don't want to, just because I think in the beginning, stuff would sell out, so there wasn't enough time to even get the marketing out there.
Yeah.
Then another part of it is just being prepared beforehand to do the marketing. I think now that we have more quantity, we have more money to do stuff,
right?
You know, now it's,
what about like do you have anybody signed on, like it's influencers or anything?
No.
Like that, just people doing it kind of naturally, right?
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, which is great.
No, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this something you would consider doing? Like
I think I would probably invest money into that before doing like ads on Google and stuff.
Well, I think you have such a relatable brand, like the right influencer could like take it to a whole another level. Yeah.
Yeah, these people are expensive.
I got it
on one guy on TikTok that he was like, bro, this dude was huge on TikTok.
Yeah. TikTok is crazy.
Yeah.
People are massive.
He was like one of the biggest guys on TikTok, and I send him a box. Was wearing all the stuff. And then I had a friend, they're like, dude, we just reached out to them so that he could do a dance to one of our songs.
Yeah.
He's 60 grand. This guy's wearing my stuff for free.
Wait, for one post?
Yes.
One post, he
one
wanted
post.
$60,000.
$60,000 is what he charges.
That ain't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
But that's how many views. Imagine, dude, like, you're going to go pay for a commercial millions of dollars.
Yeah.
These guys are getting millions of views.
Right.
For 60 grand.
Well, a buddy of mine owns a supplement company, and he hired one of these viral girls on TikTok.
Mm-hmm.
And they sold out in the first day.
That's what I'm saying.
Because of her one post.
Yeah.
Like, because it reached like 20 something million people. It's crazy.
Yeah. So it's worth it.
Yeah.
You know, like, even if you put that money behind marketing and ads, it wouldn't do the same
reach.
No,
it wouldn't
reach
the same amount of people. Yeah.
Yeah, it wouldn't.
That's
so
fascinating.
Finding the right influencer with the right reach that's relatable to your brand could, you know, make that happen.
100%.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So I want to get in, before we wrap this up, a little bit of dad life.
Yeah.
You have Two. All right. And tell me how the ages again.
Two girls. Joybella is 7 and Chloe is 13.
Chloe's 13 and she's a beast of a softball player.
She is.
Yeah. And just, you know, how has being a girl dad and just a dad in general, how is that from a perspective of like being a boss and being the founder of your company? And like, for me, it's like, it's given me, I have a 3-year-old son and it's given me like an extra incentive to do great things, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, cause you're not doing it for yourself anymore. It's like, it's not about me. Right. It's like, what am I leaving? What is my legacy? What am I leaving to him? And then also like, am I being his superhero? Am I showing him like, you know, a different side? So is that kind of the same? Like,
yeah, how do you feel? I think for me it's the same. When we had Chloe, I think my life changed. I became more responsible.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think for me, it's family is the most important thing for me. And that's why like my brand is so real to me. Like, I grew up surrounded by friends. I would wake up Saturday mornings and my friends were already in my house playing basketball. Like, wow. This is how I grew up. My mom was a single mom. We'd go on vacation and she would always let me bring a friend. It's like, so friends has always been a huge part of my life. And then family now, it's like, I think I maybe could have been way further in business if I went all in. What I mean by that is like, you know, I turned down a lot of stuff because it doesn't line up with the lifestyle that I want.
Right.
So for me, it's like, I work backwards, right? It's like, what do I want my life to look like? What I want it to look like is I want to have time for my family, my daughters and my wife. I want to have time for my friends. I want to be able to travel. So that means that dictates how much work I take on.
Right.
Or how much time I put into my work. So yeah, they are my first priority. I never want them to feel like they need to fight for my time. Whether that be with work or... The thing with them also is they don't know any different. Like, they've never seen their mom or dad go to work. Like, in the sense of like, hey, we're dropping you off at school and we're heading to the office and you got to take the bus home because we can't pick you up. Right. Like a 9-to-5,
yeah.
Right?
Because you set your own hours.
And, right, so they've
and
had
you're always available.
Right? That's the thing, right? Yeah. It's like, I think there's times of really going hard and grinding. But then I never want that to take over my life.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want that to ever take the position of me being a dad and a present husband, or having my wife have to worry or fight for my time because I'm working or traveling. So yeah, those are just priorities in my life. So yeah, my number one priority is to my family. And as much as I want to be successful and build an amazing brand, I'll never do it at the cost of not being able to spend time with them.
Man, thank you so much.
This is great.